As we know, today we commemorate Asara B'Teves, and I thought a great way to have some feeling and understanding for Asara B'Teves would be to spend the morning really trying to appreciate what life was like in the times of the Bais Rishon, and to really try to understand what was going on. So obviously Asara B'Teves was the beginning of the Churban, and that's really why we have a Yom Evel today. But don't have a misunderstanding. Up until the time that Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, it's not like life was so great in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash either. And that's really what I think is worthy of discussion this morning. So we have to back up and really start at the very beginning of the story. I didn't put this on your sheets, so you'll have to bear with me a little bit. In Shmuel Beis, the Navi there talks about the life of David HaMelech. Now, David HaMelech has a very interesting life. Shmuel was the Navi. Who was the first king over the Jewish people? Shaul. Shaul has a tragic ending, and then they have to look for a new king. So the second king of the Jewish people is David HaMelech. So that's where we pick up in Shmuel Beis, Perek Zion. The Navi there describes that, as we know, Shmuel is instructed to go look for somebody to take over after Shaul HaMelech. And he's told B'Nevuah that it's one of the children of Yishai. He goes to the family of Yishai. He surveys what's going on there. And he sees that Yishai has an older son whose name is Eliyav. And he assumes this would be the choice candidate. This would be the right person. After all, he's very charismatic. He speaks very well. He's tall and he's strong and he's able to be a warrior. And it's a good fit. It makes sense that he should be the Melech Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to Shmuel and he says, "You have it all wrong." And this is such a powerful statement. Ha'adam yira le'enayim v'Hashem yira le'levav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, your perspective as human beings sometimes is very superficial. And all you're able to see is what your eyes allow you to see. But Ani, God says, Hashem yira lalevav, I'm able to see what goes on behind that facade. And how often is this the case that we thought we knew someone until we find out what they're really about? And we don't really know what goes on in the complexity of people's hearts. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I know that you think the choice candidate to be the Melech Yisrael is Eliyav, but let me tell you, it's a mistake. He's not the right one. And from there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs him to look at one of the other children. The last choice anybody would have thought was David HaMelech. He was one of the younger children in the family. He was not at all cut out for this. And that's what David HaMelech says. We say it in Halel, Even Ma'asu Habonim Hoysel Rosh Pina. That's a reference to David HaMelech, that he was the one who was Ma'asu Habonim, that everybody was laughing at. Nobody ever imagined that something good would come from David HaMelech. And in the end, Hoysel Rosh Pina, he says, in the end, I was at the top of the mountain. I was the one who was on top of the tower because I was the one who became the Melech Yisrael. So that's the story with David HaMelech being chosen. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Shmuel notices David in the group, Hashem says to him, Kum Mashcheu Kizehu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's the one, as much as you don't believe me, that's the one who's supposed to get it. After he's chosen, Salcha Ruach Elokim El David. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this sense of serenity to David HaMelech, because he said, I stand behind your candidacy, and he told David HaMelech he has nothing to worry about. And then starts the leadership of the great David HaMelech. And he has an extremely difficult life. For anybody in the room who might be a reciter of Tehillim, you'll notice not every parak in Tehillim is so upbeat. Very often you'll find David HaMelech is talking about the difficulties of his life and he's running away from this one. So we have the story of David and Goliath. Then we have the terrible story of David and Shaul, who were rivals. They were at it with each other and David HaMelech was running away. And we have the story with the cave and all these kinds of incidents that he has with Shaul. Then we have the incident with David and Bathsheba, which is very difficult to understand. How did David HaMelech make such a mistake? And the Gemara says, if you really believe that David did a terrible Avera there, you're misunderstanding the whole story, so it needs an interpretation, but something went totally wrong there. Then you had David, the devastating consequence of David and his own son Avshalom. His own son decided to revolt against his father, and Avshalom, in the end, loses his life. David, as much as he was upset at his own son, he's devastated over the fact that his child was killed, and in the way that he died. So this is what's going on, and he's fighting wars, and he's at the forefront of everything going on in the Jewish people. And finally, in Sefer Shmuel Beis, Perek Zion, we are told the following about David HaMelech. You don't have this on here, we'll get to this soon. Vayihi ki yashav HaMelech bebeiso, v'Hashem hiniach lo misaviv mikol oivav. Finally, David comes to a place of serenity, of calm. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed David HaMelech to have that peace and calm because all of his enemies were subdued. So finally he comes to that moment of his life where he's not dealing with Shaul and he's not starting up with Goliath and he doesn't have all these obstacles. Vayomer HaMelech al Nasan HaNavi. So sometimes, you know, you think about it in our own lives. Sometimes when you're dealing with something difficult, and it's a very personal difficulty, it's a personal issue, you're not able to see a bigger perspective. You're so focused on how am I going to get through the day-to-day that you don't even see that there's a bigger perspective in life, and you're not able to think about anything bigger than today. So that's what happened with David HaMelech. He's trying to run after his tail, and he's trying to fight off all the wars, all the enemies, and he's dealing with all of his adversaries, and he doesn't have an opportunity to have a bigger perspective. And finally now, when everything's out of the way, Hashem hiniach lo misaviv, David HaMelech now calls Nasan HaNavi, and he says, Re'ena, I have a thought, and it's the first time it dawned on me. Anochi yoshev bebeis arazim, I'm sitting in a very beautiful castle. For anyone who's been to Ir David, they claim that that is the castle of David HaMelech. Whether it's true or not, I wouldn't know. But something magnificent David HaMelech lived in. Va'aron ha'elokim yoshev besocha iriya. You know, it's the first time I'm thinking about it. It doesn't really make sense. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Aron, why is the Ribono Shel Olam not situated in a palace at least as magnificent as mine? Vayomer Nasan an HaMelech. Nasan the Navi responds to the king David and he says, Kol asher b'levavcha leich asei ki Hashem imach. You're right. You want to build a Beis HaMikdash? That's what you should do. And don't worry because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. Vayhi balayla ahu, and it was on that evening. Vayhi dvar Hashem al Nasan lemar. That evening, Nasan has the shock of his life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him in a dream. And he says, Lech v'amarte al avdi al David. I know you gave counsel to David HaMelech today and you told him he should go ahead with the plan, he should build a Beis HaMikdash. But please go to David and say, Amar Hashem ha'ata tivne li bayis l'shifti. You, David, think you're going to be the one to build a Beis HaMikdash? Why did you tell him to do what he wants? Who authorized you to tell him that? So Nasan is surprised. Ki lo yashavti bebayis lemiyom ha'alosi as b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim va'ad hayom hazeh. I have not had a comfortable place to live in from the time that I took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Ve'ehya mis'alech ba'ohel v'mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the best they were able to do for me all these years was a makeshift Beis HaMikdash. They had a mishkan, it was traveling, it was put up, it was taken down. B'chol asher eshalachti b'chol b'nei Yisrael hadavar dibarti es achad shiftei Yisrael. He says, I've never had this. And suddenly David HaMelech comes up with this great idea that I'm going to build a palace for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'ata ko samar la'avdi le'David, ko amar Hashem tzavakos, go to David HaMelech and tell him, Ani lekach ticha min anave me'achar hatzon, lios nugget al ami al Yisrael. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, am the one who is responsible for your success in life. I am the one who took you. Against all odds, nobody believed you would be the Melech, and I'm the one who made you the Melech. Shmuel himself, who was a Navi, did not think it was going to be you. Ve'eya imcha, don't worry, David, I will be with you at all times. However, I want you to know that you will not build the Beis HaMikdash. Ki yimlu yamecha v'shachavta savosecha, there will come a time when unfortunately you will die. And don't worry, I will make sure that your child will take over after you. Hu yivne bayis l'shmi. Your child will be the one. Yes, you had the great idea, but I'm going to have it done through your son. As we all know now, it's Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. Ani ehye lo la'av, v'hu yihye li lebein. The Ribono Shel Olam says, I will treat your son Shlomo like my own child, and I will take care of him. I will support him. Now, in Divrei HaYamim, for anyone who learns Tanakh, I have to say I don't learn enough Tanakh myself, but it's important that we know at least what goes on. In Divrei HaYamim, you refer to that in English as Chronicles. It's called Chronicles because it repeats a lot of what happens in the story throughout Navi, and basically gives us the short, brief synopsis of everything that took place. So Divrei HaYamim really is a chronicle. So in Divrei HaYamim, this story is repeated again, but there's an additional point that's mentioned that was not said in Sefer Shmuel. So there in Divrei HaYamim we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told David HaMelech that the reason why he didn't allow him to build it, what does he have against David HaMelech? He was a great Jew, a very noble, pious Jew. So what was the problem? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Dam l'rov shafachta, umelchames gedolos asisa, And therefore, lo tivne habayis l'shmi, ki damim rabim shafachta arza lefanai. I understand, David, that you were involved in war and you had to defend the Jewish people. But because of that, many lives were lost on your hands. And those are not the appropriate choice of hands that should build the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not that I have anything against you. It's just that I don't think this is how we should have a foundation of a Beis HaMikdash built on hands that were involved in so much bloodshed and so much murder. And that's why David HaMelech lost his chance to build a Beis HaMikdash. On that occasion, by Yakel David as Kol Sari Yisrael, Sari HaShvatim and Sari HaMachlakos, David HaMelech gathers in all the politicians, all the important people, and he gets up in front of everybody and he says, Aniim Levavi Livnos Beis Menucha La'aron Bris Hashem. My greatest passion in life was to build a Beis HaMikdash. However, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, V'Halokim Amar Li Lo Sivne Abayis L'Shmi. God unfortunately told me I'm not going to be the one, but let me tell you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised me it's going to be my son Shlomo, and therefore we are going to move ahead with this plan, and Shlomo HaMelech is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the basic story. That is what ultimately happens. Now let's fill in the details. We turn to Sefer Shmuel, Beis, Perek Chavdala, that's the first thing on your sheet. So David HaMelech is excited about this possibility. He's told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow his son Shlomo to build the Beis HaMikdash. Unfortunately, he's not going to have that privilege. He won't be the one. But David says, look, let me try whatever I can to get the process going. I understand ultimately I won't be physically involved, but let me try to do something to get it going. Vayavo God el David bayomahu. So God is one of the Nevi'im at the time, and he appears to David and he says, Vayomar lo alei hakeim l'Hashem mizbeach begoren aravna hayavusi. So David takes counsel with God, the Navi, and he says, you know, I'd really like to build a Mizbeach. I want to have a place where we can centralize the Avodas Hashem, where all of us can go to service God. And I don't know where that should be. And that's a little surprising to us, because in retrospect, we all know Harabayis, of course everybody knows that. It's interesting that David HaMelech did not know that. It was not the obvious choice for him. That's fascinating. So David HaMelech asked the Navi, where would you suggest I go? And he says, well, there's a person by the name of Aravna Hayavusi, and he has a field, and that would be the good place to go. That field happened to be the Har HaBayis. So David HaMelech says, okay, if that's what the Navi says, I guess that's where I'm going to go. Vayal David kidvar God kasher tziva Hashem. David follows the instructions. He goes to meet this person, Aravna Hayavusi. Let me negotiate. Let me see what we can do. One fine day, Aravna is looking out the window, he's having his coffee, and he notices David HaMelech is passing through his front yard. He can't understand it. What is the king doing here? He goes out of his house, and he bows down in front of David HaMelech. What are you doing here? Why are you visiting me? To what do I do this great honor? David, and David says, I'm sorry to tell you, but I'm coming to buy your house. Liknos me'imcha es hagoren. Not only am I buying your house, I need to buy the whole mountain that you live on, the whole acre of land. Livnos mizbeach la'Hashem. It's not for myself, it's because I want to build, I want to construct a mizbeach for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'te'atzer ha'magefa me'al ha'am. Maybe that will be a way to stop this terrible plague that's going on in the world right now. Vayomer Aravna David, Aravna says to David, Yikach. We're not going to negotiate. Take it. If that's what you want to do, take it. Vayal Adoni HaMelech Hato Be'enav. Take whatever you want. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Hakol Nasan Aravna HaMelech LaMelech. Aravna HaYavusi gives over not just the property, but he gives over everything that's in it. And he says, if you think the wood will help you, take it. If you think the animals will be beneficial to you, take it all. Vayomer Aravna HaMelech Hashem Elokecha Yurtzecha. Vayomer HaMelech Al Aravna. David responds and he says, Lo. There's no free lunch. Never works. You always end up paying for it on the other side. And we have a precedent for this as well. Avraham Avinu, when he goes to negotiate for Ma'aris HaMachpelah, what do they say? Take it. Of course you should bury your wife here. And he says, no. I'm not taking favors. I'm going to pay for it the way I'm supposed to. Because he knows that if he takes a gift from them, he's going to end up paying for it later on anyway. So David HaMelech takes the precedent of Avraham Avinu, and he says, I'm not going to take this as a gift, I'm going to pay for it. And that's what he does. V'lo ala l'Hashem elokai olos chinam. I'm not going to have a cheap relationship with God. It's going to cost me. It's going to hurt me. Not hurt me physically, but it's going to cost me to serve God, and I'm okay with that. So he pays some kind of money for it, and then he goes ahead with the plan. Okay, so that's the first mention that we have. David builds a Mizbeach on the Har HaBayis, and things start getting into motion. Now at the end of David HaMelech's life, we turn to Sefer Malachim. We end Sefer Shmuel. We go to Sefer Malachim. David HaMelech is now an older man, and he's not as aware of what's going on around him as he once was. He's not as powerful as he once may have been. The problem is, who's going to take over after David HaMelech passes away? This is the same problem they have in many communities. The Chassidish Rebbe is, you know, at the end of his life, and the children are fighting who's going to take over. So, who would you say should take over? The way it normally works is, in royalty, the oldest child takes over. So who is David HaMelech's oldest child? The oldest child is not Adoniyahu. The oldest child was Amnon. So we don't know much about Amnon. Why do we not know much about Amnon? Because he was killed. Who killed him? His brother! Absalom, his brother, killed him! Absalom didn't want any competition around. He said, maybe I'll be the king, I'll be in charge, so I got to knock out the competition. My older brother Amnon, he got rid of him. Yeah, there was an issue, of course. Amnon had his own issues, but basically his own brother Absalom kills him. So Amnon is out of the picture. Second child of David HaMelech is also not a well-known figure. His name was Kilav. He also is out of the equation. Why is he out of the equation? The Mefarshim are not exactly sure. It seems the Mefarshim say he was a very good person. He would have been a likely candidate. It seems some Mefarshim explain that he died young. He had some kind of illness. He died young. For whatever reason, he's out of the picture as well. So you have the first two children are out. Third child was Absalom. Absalom felt, I am the perfect choice. Both of my older brothers are out of the way. I am the next in line. And he feels that he's worthy of being the king. He ends up revolting against his own father. He also is killed. Can you imagine? David HaMelech's oldest three sons are killed in tragic ways. Two of his children were killed because of terrible things that they did or that were going on. One of his children died young for whatever reason it is. And now the fourth child is Adoniyahu. So Adoniyahu believes, three of my older brothers are out of the way. I am now the most obvious choice. And Adoniyahu feels as the natural successor, he has to do something to start rallying support behind himself. And he does it while his father is alive. But it's a little bit disrespectful to go to his elderly parent and say, you know, we got to have these conversations. I think at some point you're not going to be able to lead the Jewish people any longer for whatever reason. So he decides to leave his father out of the conversation, out of respect to his father. But Adoniyahu does everything in his power to become and to set up the system that he should be the next king. How does he do that? So he gets a great support behind him. And he has the backing of some very important Jews at that time. One of them, most prominently, was Yoav ben Tseruya. Who was Yoav ben Tseruya? He was Sar Tzeva LeMelech David. He was the commander-in-chief of David HaMelech's army. One of the most important positions of a melech in those days was to fight wars. The commander-in-chief of the army was probably the most important position in the entire cabinet. So Yoav ben Tseruya, who was a faithful servant of David HaMelech, who was the commander-in-chief, who was so trusted by David, all of a sudden starts to believe that Adoniah should be the next king, and he stands behind him. Now that's a very big statement of support. And the Jewish community is aware of that. Outside of that, Evyasar, who was one of the Kohanim of the time, also put in his candidacy behind Adoniah. So things seemed to be going pretty well, but it was an extremely contentious time because Shlomo believed that there was some kind of nevuah that he was going to be the king, even though he was not the oldest child alive at the time. And Shlomo also rallies behind himself Tzadok HaKohen, who was also a very important personality, and most importantly, Shlomo has Nasan HaNavi. So you have this major contentious battle going on between Adoniah and his brother Shlomo. Adoniah decides, as the Navi says, to make a Zevach Mifo'ar, which means basically an inaugural ceremony for himself. So he sets up a big stage. He invites the entire Jewish people to come, and all of his followers, all of his supporters are invited. And it says, Kol Echav B'nei HaMelech are also invited. David HaMelech, let's not forget, had many wives, which also meant he had many children. So he had many children, and all of them are invited, except, most notably, who is not? Shlomo. Shlomo is left out. Why is he left out? Because the last person you want there is Shlomo. That's your adversary. That's the one who you're trying to prove is not going to be the Melech. As this is going on, in the background, there's a big ceremony, and everybody's coming, and there's tremendous support for Adonia. Nasan HaNavi, as we mentioned, was one of the great Nevi'im at the time, and he realizes we have a problem. Adonia is not supposed to be the king. I had a Ruach HaKodesh that Shlomo is supposed to be the king. So he doesn't know what to do. He sends Bathsheba, who's the daughter of David, he sends Bathsheba in to talk to her husband, and he says, make sure your husband is aware what's going on. He's an old man. He doesn't really know that his children are taking advantage of the fact that he's old. Make sure you go and you speak to him and tell him that his own son Adonia is trying to take over and it's inappropriate and it's supposed to be Shlomo. So that's what happens. Bathsheba goes in and she informs her husband of everything that's going on behind his back. David HaMelech says, we must do something immediately to stop this. So he brings his son Shlomo to the Ma'ayan HaGichon, right? That was a very significant place. If you've ever been in Yerushalayim, you go to the Gichon Springs, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. He goes there and he anoints his son to be the next king, and word gets out that David HaMelech has made a public statement that his son Adonia is not the right choice, his son Shlomo is, and now Adonia is scared for his life. Why? Because now he's considered to be what we refer to as a Morid B'Malchus. Now that it's been determined that you are not the king and you're acting like one, that means the real king has a right to kill you. So Adonia famously goes and holds on to the Karnos HaMizbeach. And he says, my brother won't kill me if I'm standing on the Har HaBayis, on the Mizbeach. He's not going to kill me here. And Shlomo HaMelech says, take it easy. Everything will be okay. As long as you keep quiet and you settle down from all of this that you've been trying to build, I'll leave you alone. Fine. That's what happens. Shlomo HaMelech becomes the king. Anybody know how old he was at the time? 12. 12 years old. Shlomo HaMelech becomes the king, the Melech Yisrael. Now Shlomo HaMelech, just to have a context, I hope I'm not boring anybody with the details. I find Navi fascinating. So Shlomo HaMelech, just so that you understand what Shlomo HaMelech was all about, we're basically going through like a few hundred years of history. So put on your seatbelt. So Shlomo HaMelech comes into a very firm and well-established Malchus. His father basically fought off all the enemies. Everything was going really well. His father has this plan of building a Beis HaMikdash. He wasn't allowed to do so. But Shlomo HaMelech finds himself in a very secure position. And in fact, you know, sometimes we think today, it's very strange why there are so many millions of Arabs around the country of Israel. And sometimes they attack, but for the most part, it's pretty quiet. And the question is, why? And very often the reason why is because they're so busy with their own civil wars killing each other that they don't have time to think about killing anybody else. And although they hate Israel, but they don't have a chance to think about it enough, if they would all get together and realize that they have the upper hand, Khalila, right? We don't know what would be. And that's the same thing that was going on in the days of Shlomo. So if you look in the Navi, we're told that Egypt obviously is one of the closest neighbors to Eretz Yisrael. And in Mitzrayim, at the time, they were having civil wars, the Navi says. Then you go, the Chittim were also one of the neighbors there, and their government was disintegrating. They were having a third election. So they were like so busy having their problems there that they couldn't get their act together either. So they couldn't fight at the time. So Shlomo walks into a perfect situation. Nobody around me to worry about. Everybody's disintegrating. They're all having their own civil wars. They don't have time to focus on me. My father already fought off the major enemies. And now, his father leaves him over instructions. Instruction number one is, build a Beis HaMikdash. I left you a perfect scenario. Everything's great. This is what you should be focused on because there's nothing else that should be your attention right now. And David HaMelech tells him, number two, be vigilant about keeping all the mitzvahs Hashem. Number three, he says, you need to take nekama from Yoav ben Tseruya. He was the general of my army for so many years, and then he turned on me. Make sure you take revenge from him, which needs an explanation. Obviously, this wasn't David's personal vendetta against him. There was a reason for it. And Shimi ben Gera, who was also involved in a problem when Avshalom was having his interaction with David, So David leaves over these instructions, but most importantly, he says, your job is to build a Beis HaMikdash. Now let's go back to the page here. Malachim Aleph Perakei, number Beis on the sheet. Hashem Nasan Chachma LeShlomo Kasher Diber Lo. God granted Shlomo HaMelech with tremendous wisdom. Vayhi Shalem Ben Chiram Uven Shlomo Vayichrusu Bish Shneihem. So Shlomo comes into a great situation and there's peace, and he makes peace treaties with all the enemies, and now he has the opportunity to focus on a Beis HaMikdash. Vayiten Elokim Chachma LeShlomo. God gives Shlomo HaMelech tremendous insight and wisdom. Utvuna Harbe Miyod Verochav Lev Kachol Asher Al Sfas Hayam. Vaterev Chachma Shlomo Mechachmas Kol Bnei Kedem. Shlomo was more brilliant, more intelligent, more wise than anybody who had come before him. Vayhi Shmo B'chol HaGoyim Saviv. Everybody had heard of him because there was a lot to hear about. Shlomo was a very prominent figure. And so, in the fourth year of Shlomo's rule, look, he says, I want to build a Beis HaMikdash, but I first need to get my bearings. I need to have an understanding of the geopolitical situation. I need to understand what exactly I'm in charge of here. And that's what happens. 4 years into his rulership, he decides, we're going to start this campaign of building the Beis HaMikdash. How old is he at the time? And higher mathematics. 12 plus 4 is 16. So he's 16 years old, and he starts to embark on this journey of building a Beis HaMikdash, which took 7 years from start to finish. Why did it take 7 years? Because number one, he needed a variety of materials. He wasn't able to get everything in the close vicinity of Yerushalayim. So he has to make some kind of agreement with one of the neighbors, one of the neighboring countries, who he happened to be at peace with. He makes an agreement with them from Lebanon, right? From Lebanon, they were going to send arazim. They were going to send cedar wood from Lebanon to be used for the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's thing number one he has to do, is make a treaty with them that they're going to send the wood that was needed to build. Then he needs to find people who are going to be able to do the work and to transport everything from there. So in the end, the Navi says there were about 150,000 people who were involved in this initiative, which is astounding. So 150,000 people to us, like we've heard such numbers, but 150,000 people in the days when there was no mode of communication and no radios back and forth to tell anybody what the update was. To manage a site of 150,000 people who are involved in this and to do it effectively, it's astounding. Shlomo HaMelech realizes the problem is we don't have money to build a Beis HaMikdash. Well, same problem every institution has. So what do? They put an assessment on the community and they try to figure out, what are we going to need to build a Beis HaMikdash? And basically, Shlomo levies a tremendous tax on all the Jewish communities around the country because he says, this is what's going to be needed to build a Beis HaMikdash. The problem is, Shlomo did not do it in the most effective way. Let's read together. Ule Shlomo, number Dalit. Ule Shlomo, Shneim Aser Netzivim Al Kol Yisrael. Shlomo HaMelech had 12 representatives, 12 tax collectors that were all throughout the country. He said, your job is that each month you're going to have to collect the taxes from your Shevet, 12 Shvatim, 12 representatives, 12 months in the year. So each Shevet has to take care of their taxes 1 month a year. The problem was that he was unfair in the way that he split up the tax. So if he would say, this is how much money we need altogether, and each Shevet has to come up with the same amount, that would have been fair. But that's not what he said. He was deciding as he went along who was going to have to pay what. So for example, Shevet Yehuda, he said, had an automatic exemption. Why? Just because. So Shlomo HaMelech made this terrible sense of disunity because there was a lot of jealousy in the different communities. People were looking at certain Shvatim and saying, why are they paying more? Why are they paying less? And why are we being taxed? And why is it that we have to work so hard to pay the taxes when all of Shevet Yehuda is not paying anything? So this was a major issue, but in the end, Shlomo HaMelech got it done. And the tragic end of Shlomo HaMelech's life was in Sefer Melachim, when we're told that Shlomo marries Nashim Nachrios, whatever that means. He marries women that he was not supposed to marry. And although he was very powerful and very strong, and he ended up building a Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech, in the end, Hashem tells him, Kara Hashem es mamlachtecha, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him, because of the terrible sin that you have committed, I'm now going to split, and there's no longer going to be one king. So until this point, we had three kings. We had Shaul, who was Melech Yisrael. After him comes David. After him comes Shlomo. And that was the last time that there was a unified leadership of the Jewish people. From then on, the Jewish community split into two. How did it split into two? Shlomo HaMelech has a son by the name of Rechavam. Rechavam is the one who takes over after his father. Rechavam sees a great opportunity to continue on all of these taxes, even though the Beis HaMikdash was built already, but he says, this is what my father did, and I'm going to continue in that way. Yeravam is the adversary. Yeravam ben Nevat decides that here's my opportunity to change things up a little bit. He travels to Yerushalayim. He meets with Rechavam, the new king, and he says, you know, it's time for us to simmer down a little bit. It's time for us to lower the taxes. It's time for us to give the Jews a little bit of an easier life. And your father was a tyrant, but it's time for us to make life a little bit simpler now. Rechavam says, give me 3 days to think about it. In those 3 days, he takes counsel. The older members of his council all tell him he's right. Beis HaMikdash has been built. Time to calm down a little bit. Let's make life a little easier. The younger advisors, who are always in for a good fight, told him, no, don't give in, and it's time for you, in defiance, it's time for you to show that you're in charge. The way to show that you're in charge is by being strong, by being stubborn. Don't give in. My father always used to say when we were growing up, for anyone who went to Why You Were Stern, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I remember as a child, he said it all the time. So they have guards at the front of the buildings, right? I assume they had that for many years already. So the guards were always were sometimes strict about letting people in the buildings. So my father used to say, I have to show how powerful I am by telling you that if you don't have the right ID card or the right sticker, you're not going to be allowed in, right? That's what shows how powerful I am. So he said it would also show how powerful you are to say, I have the right to give you a special dispensation to let you in even though you don't have the card. That also shows power, right? There are two ways of expressing your power. You can be really tough and really strong, or you can be in a position to be forgiving. That's also a tremendous strength. So here, Rechavam had two choices. I can show my strength by saying, you know, I'm a new king, I'm going to do things differently, and the way I'm going to show how strong I am is that I have the ability to lower the taxes. Look how great I am. He also had the choice to show how strong he was by saying, I'm going to be stubborn and defiant, and I'm not going to allow people this choice. And the response that he gives after 3 days is, number hey, Avi hichbed es ulchem, my father made life difficult for you, v'ani osif al ulchem, I'm going to make life worse for you. I'm not just going to keep the taxes what they are, I'm going to raise the taxes more than they ever have been. Avi yiser eschem ashotim, my father used to hit you over the head with sticks, ani ayaser eschem ba'akarbayim, I'm going to come out with metal rods, you're going to have a much rougher life with me. That was the attitude of Rechavam, which was a tremendous mistake, and it cost him his entire life. Why? Because Yeravam ben Nevat is so upset by this response that he decides that it's time to revolt. And he decides, you know what? If that's the position he's going to take, if that's the attitude he has, we don't need him. Let him be his king over there. I'm going to start my own kingship. So he takes 10 of the 12 Shvatim, and he goes off on his own. Two Shvatim, Yehuda and Binyamin, who live around the confines of Yerushalayim, stuck out with Rechavam, with the family of David HaMelech. The other 10 Shvatim living across the country all decided, we don't need this anymore. We're going to start our own thing. And they all rally behind Yeravam ben Nevat. Now here's a problem. Problem was, Yeravam ben Nevat says, I have 10 Shvatim behind me, I'm doing pretty well, but the issue is, I'm afraid that at some point they're going to turn and see something good in the other side, in the other king. How do I stop that from happening? Well, Yeravam ben Nevat says to himself, problem is, there's a mitzvah, shalosh pa'amim bashana, yerah kol zechurcha es p'nei Hashem Elokecha. 3 times a year, Jews are expected to go do the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. They're supposed to go to the Beis HaMikdash. So what's going to happen? They're going to go to Yerushalayim. They're going to see the other king on display. That's where his palace is. And maybe while they're there, they're going to be convinced that he's right. So I have to do everything in my power to make sure that nobody visits Yerushalayim. Now how do I do that? Everybody likes Yerushalayim. So he goes to the extreme. And he makes, as the Navi said, Shnei Egle Hazav. We're all familiar with what the first Egel Hazav was. That was a mistake, the first Egel Hazav. Nobody really intended to do that. It ended up being a big mistake. This was intentional. He makes two Egel Azavs. He puts one at the north, one at the south, and he says, no more God. We don't believe in God anymore. That old traditional Judaism, that's not what we follow. We now serve an Egel Azav. Not only that, Yeravam ben Nevat also puts out Shotrim along the way, along the highways, and he says, if you see anybody who's traveling toward Yerushalayim, don't allow them to go. Make them go to the Egel Azav. Tell them Yerushalayim is not real, and the Beis HaMikdash is no longer functional. The tragedy of this is, and sometimes we don't think about it, you say, oh, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed it. No. The tragedy is that 35 years after Shlomo had finally built the Beis HaMikdash, look what's happening. Look what's happening. The Jews aren't even interested in coming. And not only they're not interested in coming, they're serving Avodah Zarah. It's amazing. 35 years after it was built, nobody's interested anymore. And Yeravam ben Nevat has all of his evil plans, and he's very successful. And he's very successful at it. And then we're told in Sefer Malachim, as well as in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, in the fifth year of Rechavam's rule, is this on here? Let me see. Vav, thank you very much. Vayhi v'shana achamishas l'melech Rechavam. It was in the fifth year of Rechavam's rule. Again, Rechavam was the son of Shlomo. He's hanging on for dear life. He only has two shvatim. Right underneath him, the rug was pulled out. Yeravam ben Nevat takes 10 of the shvatim away. They're on their own. And here we are in the fifth year, which is pretty early on in his career. Ala Sheshak melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. Who ever heard of Sheshak? You ever heard of him? Well, look what he did. Sheshak, the king of Mitzrayim, decides, hey, it's a high time that I should go and loot the Beis HaMikdash. Vayikach es otzros Beis Hashem. He goes and he clears out the Beis HaMikdash. 35 years after it was built. Ves otzros Beis HaMelech, ves hakol lakach. So imagine, he walks out with everything. Clears out the treasury of the king, clears out the Beis HaMikdash. Vayikach es kol neginei hazav asher asa Shlomo. He takes everything gold that Shlomo had worked so hard to construct. He took it. And now Rechavam has a problem. We want to have a functioning Beis HaMikdash, but I don't have any money left. I don't have any kelim. I don't have any money. What am I going to do? So he makes makeshift kelim in the Beis HaMikdash. He makes meginei nechoshes. The difference between nechoshes and zav is tremendous. But what was he supposed to do? He was cleared out of everything. Again, keep in mind, 35 years after the Beis HaMikdash had been built, it was almost destroyed. And the only way it wasn't destroyed is because they were happy just taking everything and leaving. So why break down the building if we just got everything that we need? But it was in a state of complete disrepair. That was the first story. And by the way, that was not the only time the Beis HaMikdash was looted. It happened again. Amatzia is one of the kings that's described in Sefer Malachim as well. And we're told there that Amatzia also decided that it's time to go and start up with the Jewish people. And he comes to Yerushalayim, and he breaks through the walls. And again, V'lakach es kol hazav ha'kesef es kol ha'kelim ha'nimtzam be'Beis Hashem. Here's a second attempt. Somebody comes, clears out the Beis HaMikdash again. How many of us have ever heard of Amatzia, Sheshak? These were evil people who came, looted the Beis HaMikdash, and went on their merry way. And he was not the last one either. We have Melech Ashur, who wants to come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And nobody knows what to do. Melech Ashur wants to destroy. They make some kind of deal. They send him a bribe. They cut down the... They send him some of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to be a bribe to him. This happened over and over and over again. There were so many who came along and tried to wreak havoc in the Jewish community in Yerushalayim. So they did not have it easy. Sometimes we think about the Bayis Rishon and we say it was a glorious period in history. It was very exciting when Shlomo HaMelech built it, and that lasted for some time. But 35 years in the span of life, it's not much time. I'm not even 35 years old. But it's not so much time. Sorry. This is getting too intense. So 35 years was not so long. And then you look, what else happened in the period of the Bayis Rishon? You have Ahav and Izebel fighting against Eliyahu HaNavi. Everybody's serving Avodah Zarah, and Eliyahu HaNavi is trying to fight back. It was crazy what was happening. A complete disintegration. Look and say for Malachim, we have in Perek Yutes. This is number Zion. Vatishlach Izebel Malach El Elio Leimor. Izebel sends a message to Elio Anavi. And she says, Kol Yasun Elokim V'Kol Yosifun, Ki Ka'es Machar Asimis Nafshecha K'nefesh Hachameyam. I'm going to kill you. Can you imagine sending a message to Elio Hanavi that you're going to kill him? All in the period of the Bayis Rishon. This is what's going on. Sancheirev comes. Sancheirev was the Melech Ashur. And he also attempts to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody knows what to do. Chizkiyo HaMelech realizes he's in a very tough spot. He's the king at the time. And he says, if I don't do something to negotiate with him, we're going to lose everything. So Chizkiyo decides to cut down the gates, the beautiful golden gates of the Beis HaMikdash, and he sends them to Sancheirev, and he says, maybe you'll take this as a bribe and leave us alone. It worked. But can you imagine? The next day people show up to the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no gates, there's no doors. What kind of house is this? This is what was going on in the days of the Bayis Rishon. In the end, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar decided that he also should have an opportunity to feel powerful, like Ashur and all those who came before him. And he decides to go and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to read the Psukim in a few minutes. I can't believe it's already almost time to end our shiur. This was all just a very brief introduction to get to the main point of Aser B'Teves. This was the background of the Bayis Rishon. This is what was happening. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed on Tisha B'Av. Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. We'll speak in a few minutes about the significance of Aser B'Teves, what happened on that day. We'll talk in a minute. But basically, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Jewish people go into Gullus. How long are they in Gullus? 70 years. The Navi promised them in advance, you're only going to be in Gullus Babel for 70 years. After that, God is going to allow you. Yifkod Hashem, God is going to allow you to come back. Ezra is the Navi at the time after the 70 years. He goes around rallying that everybody should go back. It's time to make Aliyah again. How many people go with him? Navi says about 10,000 and change, which in the grand scheme of the Jewish people is nothing. And Ezra, in fact, I think the Navi says, he gets to the Yarden, he's about to cross over into Eretz Yisrael, and he says, one second, do we even have enough Kohanim to run a Beis HaMikdash? Like, do we even have enough people that would be able to do the job that we want to do in Yerushalayim? Why are we going back? And he has to turn back around to rally up a few more people to come with him because they don't have enough. They don't have enough people. That's how pathetic it was. And you say it's pathetic, but we are just as pathetic. Same thing. God came to all of us 70 years ago and said, time to come back. And Gullus Babel is over, the same way he did back then. And for the most part, we are ignoring him. So yes, are there people who listened to that call and who made Aliyah? Yes. And do we love visiting Eretz Yisrael and do we love to see everything that it represents? Of course we love it. Are we willing to step in and say, I want to follow Ezra, who's convincing the Jews to go back? So the problem is we don't have a Navi today. So we have all kinds of doubts. But even when there was a Navi, and he was telling them, God promised me this is where we're supposed to be, nobody listened to him. And we suffer from the same problem today. A point to think about on a day which we commemorate, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Yerushalayim, it's a time to think about how seriously we would listen if a Navi came to us and said it's time to go back. So they're in Gullus 70 years. They're devastated that there's no Beis HaMikdash. And they say, we cannot just let this go unnoticed. We have to do something. So they decide we're going to have days of communal mourning to remind us of what was in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Asher Weiss told me on many occasions, and I think it's a very powerful observation, 70 years is not such a long time, but it's enough time for people to forget everything about their past. How many years were the Jews stuck in communist Russia? About 70 years, and look what it did. That was enough time for an entire generation to forget everything about Jewish culture and Jewish heritage. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not so long, but it's enough time to make them forget. And at the time of Ezra, they were afraid. We're going to be in Gullus for 70 years, which is not that long. God promised us we're going to go back, but it's long enough for everybody to forget what Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash are all about. So we need to do something to make sure it doesn't happen. How can we do that? Well, we're going to institute Tisha B'Av and Aser B'Teves and some Gedalia. We're going to institute these 4 days of public mourning in order that our children, who are born here in Bavel, who know nothing about Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, at least they'll understand that there was something that we look forward to. And after 70 years, when it's time to go back, it won't be a foreign concept to them. That's where the idea of Tisha B'Av, Asara B'Teves, Tzom Gedaliah came from. It was in order that they should be reminded that there is a Yerushalayim that we look forward to. There is going to be a Galus and a Geula. There is going to be a Beis HaMikdash once again. Here's the problem. 70 years later, they go back to Eretz Yisrael, they build a Beis HaMikdash, and the first year Tisha B'Av, they have a problem. What do? We're going to sit on the floor and cry over the fact that we lost the Bayis Rishon when we're here celebrating the Bayis Sheni? Doesn't really make sense. So they didn't know what to do. But how can we just get rid of Tisha B'Av? We've been doing it for the last 70 years. So they present the Shaila to Zechariah HaNavi. Zechariah HaNavi is alive at the time, and they ask him, what should we do? Do we still observe Tisha B'Av when there's nothing to mourn about anymore? And Zechariah comes back with the response. If you look at the end of the second side here, number Yud, Zechariah responds, Komar Hashem Tzavakos, I asked your Shaila to God Himself. Should we be observing Tisha B'Av anymore, or perhaps not? And the Ribbono Shel Olam responded, Tzom HaRevi, which is Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, because Nisan Iyar Sivan Tamuz, that's the fourth month. Tzom HaChamishi is Tisha B'Av, that's in the fifth month of the year. Tzom HaShvi is Tzom Gedalia, right? Tishrei is the seventh month of the year. And Tzom HaAsiri is Teves. Teves is the tenth month of the year, on the tenth day of that month. All of those four from here on in, Yihye LeBeis Yehuda LeSason ULeSimcha ULeMoadim Tovim. We're not going to mourn anymore. We have a Beis HaMikdash. Now it's time to celebrate. And the Rambam takes those words of Zechariah HaNavi and he says, from here we learn, writes the Rambam in number Yud Aleph, Kalatzomos HaElu, all of these days of public mourning, Asidim LiBata LiMos HaMashiach. When we will be Zocha to have the coming of Mashiach and the Bayis HaShlishi, we are not going to observe these days of public mourning any longer. V'lo od ela shehem asidim lios yamim tovim v'yimei sason v'simcha. Tisha B'Av is going to be a day of great celebration. We're not going to be tormented anymore. We're not going to be suffering because we have a Beis HaMikdash. It's the same story that happened in the days of Ezra, in the days of Zechariah. So what did happen on Asara B'Teves with all that in mind? Let's look at the psukim here in Melachim Beis, Perek Chafei, number Tes. So the Navi tells us, Vayhi b'shnas hatshiyas l'malcho b'chodesh ha'asiri. And it was in the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu's rule. He was the king of the Jewish people. Bad Nebuchadnezzar melech bavel hu v'chalchelo al Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, Vayichan aleha, Vayivnu aleha deik saviv. Nebuchadnezzar makes a siege around Yerushalayim. And now the Jewish community within these walls are trapped. Vatavo ha'ir b'matzar ad ashtei esrei shana lemelech Tzidkiyahu. That is astounding. 2.5 years the Jews were able to survive on nothing in Yerushalayim alone. Nobody was able to get out of the walls of Yerushalayim. If you've been to Yerushalayim, you know how much vegetation grows there. Not so much. How much wheat is growing in the fields of Yerushalayim? Hardly any. And somehow the Jews were able to survive for 2.5 years. It's amazing. So Nebuchadnezzar has no way of getting in. The Jews are defending themselves. 2.5 years they're somehow able to live. B'tisha l'chodesh, and it was on the ninth of the month, v'yechazak harav ba'ir v'lo hayalechem la'am ha'aretz. After 2.5 years, one fine day, people realize there's nothing more to eat. What are we going to do? And when that happened, Vatibaka ha'ir v'chal anshe ha'malchama ha'layla derech hashar. On that occasion, people decided it's time for us to leave the city. We need to get food. So they break out of the walls of Yerushalayim and they go looking for food. On that occasion, everything broke loose. Because now that the walls were broken through, they had no choice. But now the enemy was able to come in. And the tragic story of Tzidkiyahu was Ves Bnei Tzidkiyahu. I'm sorry, I skipped a little bit. Vayispesu as Hamelech vayalu oso el Hamelech Bavel. They take Tzidkiyahu Hamelech. They incarcerate him. They kill all of Tzidkiyahu Hamelech's children in front of his own eyes. He watches how they murdered all of his children. Not only that, it says that afterward they blind Tzidkiyahu. They blind his eyes, And then the Navi says, "Bachodesh hachamishi b'shiva lachodesh hishnas sha'es reishana lemelech nevuchadnezzar ba nevuzaradan rab hatabachim eved melech bavel Yerushalayim vayisrof es beis Hashem." Then we have the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar sends one of his generals after 2.5 years, and he destroys, ravages Yerushalayim, destroys the Beis HaMikdash, knocks down the walls of Yerushalayim, and anybody, it says, who was left at that period of time was killed. Everybody was killed out. Everybody was wiped out. It was a terrible massacre. It was a terrible tragedy. And the reason why Asara B'Teves is significant is because it was the beginning of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. How so? It was the beginning because that's when the siege began. That's when he laid siege around Yerushalayim. So yes, it's true, they held him off for 2.5 years, but at some point, they weren't able to hold off any longer. So that is a significant day because this is really when the beginning of the end happened. This is when the first Beis HaMikdash started in its descent, because this is when they were trapped, and this is when they had no choice any longer. Yechezkel HaNavi writes as well in Perek Chav Dalet, "Vayhi dvar Hashem elai b'shana hatshias b'chodesh ha'asiri b'echad l'chodesh lemer." Did I put this on here? No, I'm sorry, I apologize. So Yechezkel HaNavi writes that it was b'shana hatshias in the 9th year, b'chodesh ha'asiri b'esar l'chodesh. What is that? Chodesh ha'asiri is Teves. The 10th day is Asar B'Teves. So Yechezkel HaNavi is writing on Asar B'Teves. Ben Adam. The Ribbono Shel Olam calls out to him and he says, Ben Adam, you'll notice, for anybody who studies Tanakh, you'll notice that in Yechezkel in particular, very often he's referred to as Ben Adam. When God refers to him, he calls him Ben Adam, which is strange. All of us are Ben Adam. All of us are human beings. So why is Yechezkel referred to as such? So one of the Mefarshim says, I didn't have a chance to look it up this morning, I think they're Radak or Rashi, one of the major Mefarshim there writes, the reason why is because had you met Yechezkel HaNavi, you would have believed that he was an angel. You would not have believed that he was a regular human being who was born to two parents like the rest of us. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam goes and makes a point to refer to him as Ben Adam. No. Yechezkel elevated himself to be the person who he was, but don't forget he started off as Ben Adam like everybody else, and you too can be the same. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to him and he says, Ben Adam, Ksav lecha es shem hayom es etzem hayom hazeh. I want you to write down the date. Today is Asar B'Teves. This is a significant date. Don't forget, Yechezkel was living in Galus. Yechezkel was not in Yerushalayim, so he had no idea what was happening in Yerushalayim. And God says, I want you to write down this date. And on this day, it's significant because Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh Samach Melech Bavel El Yerushalayim. On this day is the day that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel, laid siege on Yerushalayim. Later on, it was corroborated that that was correct, because those who were living in Yerushalayim also had the same date written down. So Yechezkel HaNavi prophesizes that this is what was going on, although Yechezkel was in Galus. But this is really the background to what was going on in the days of the Bayis Rishon, ultimately leading to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, what led them into Galus 70 years. After 70 years, they were allowed to come back, build the second Beis HaMikdash. And in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no longer any reason to observe Asar B'Teves, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, because they had a Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara then goes into a discussion, well, what did we do after the 400 years of the second Beis HaMikdash? Did we revert back to the original? Or do we now have to reconsider? Should we be mourning the first Beis HaMikdash again? All those dates, the significant dates from Bayis Rishon? Or would you say, no, that's old history already, it's time to move on? So that's a big discussion in the Gemara. How did we come to have these public fast days that we have today? I see we're out of time. But this is the basic story. Let me just make a